Welcome to Your True North, a program that explores how values act as a compass, directing our lives and work. Inspiring guests tell how key events and influential figures shaped their values and how they've used those values to create a life rich in meaning, accomplishments, and personal satisfaction. Your True North is hosted by Cindy Camp. Are you seeking your true north? Then welcome.
Welcome to Your True North, the show that explores how values act as a compass for life's journey. I'm your host, Cindy Camp, and today I'll be talking with Eli Nichols, president of the Reese Puffer Gay-Straight Alliance and the co-founder of the Youth Activism Coalition. He's also a recent high school graduate. Nichols has worked with fellow students and organizations from across the United States during the past 2 years. He'll be attending George Mason University in the fall to study government and international politics. Welcome, Eli. Nice to have you here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It really means a lot.
So you've just finished high school, and you're now heading to college. Already in the last year of high school, you were a student leader and co-founder of the Youth Activism Coalition. What does this group do, and how did you decide to start an organization while still in high school?
Well, I'll start from the beginning. It was me and my friend, Leah Diga. We were just very angry about what was going on with Scott Pruitt and the environment, the EPA, and sort of realizing how we are the youth and we have opinions too, because it seems as if the political arena is dominated by older, typically men, and there's not a lot of young voices out there. So we needed a space that accommodated the youth so we could have conversation and we could come up with solutions. And that solution ended in us creating a group called the Youth Activism Coalition that's been active for a year now.
And it sounds like the group started with a real environmental focus?
It was, but we wanted to make sure that it was a broad focus because we understand that as being a young person, we have a lot of different opinions and we have a lot of different focuses. Like, my focus has been on gun violence recently, and for the last few years, it's been on LGBT rights as well. While my friend who I started this group with, it was about environment, and that was what she was super passionate about.
Did you get much buy-in from other high school students? Because I know at that stage of life, there are many people who are really busy with homework, busy with part-time jobs, college applications, and not necessarily very politically aware yet. So what kind of reception did you get from your fellow students?
It was amazing. Our first meeting had roughly between 20 and 30 people, which is amazing. And I think it really was the fact that we started not with a meeting, but we started with a rally. And that gained about 70 people there. So it's not a lot of people, but we started to see who's going to take the youth seriously. And we started to see what youth are interested. And that rally was about education. It was a back-to-school education rally. And it talked about the budget cuts and how it's going to affect us students. And
that's in Muskegon
when
you go
Muskegon,
to high school?
Yes.
And did you have students from more than one high school there at the rally?
We had Reese Puffer. We had a few Muskegon students. We had community members. It wasn't large, like I said, but it started to show how we were serious and we were dedicated to organizing.
And did you partner with any adults in your community?
No. That's something that we've realized when we partner with adults, we have to very much so make sure that we have the heavy hands. Because adults will want to do it a certain way because of their history in it. And it can be beneficial at some times, but you also have to allow us to make those mistakes, or you have to allow us to take it in a direction that we want to. And I think ever since the Parkland students have been speaking out, adults have been more apt to allowing us to use our abilities as they come.
Yeah, so you started this organization before the gun violence that happened in Parkland at the school this winter, but that kind of gave you another direction or maybe some new energy?
Yeah, for me personally, I do a lot of the organizing for the group as well as Leah and Brian and Cassandra, but the gun violence prevention and school safety really hit home for me because it was just 2 days after the Parkland shooting, there was a shooting right outside my house. And so hearing those gunshots, I just wrote an essay about this when I was applying for the Giffords Fellowship. And I heard the gunshots, I looked outside, I didn't see anything. And I just thought, that's strange, nothing changes on a night when there's so much violence in our street. The sky is still blue, it's still dark outside, but nothing's happening. It's just like another day is happening in Muskegon or Muskegon Heights.
So that motivated you personally, and also it sounds like your group in Muskegon, to get more involved with gun safety. Do you want to talk a little bit about some of the things that you've done? I know you've been very active in trying, I think, to do things that are kind of public, that really are attention-getting. I know I first found your name because I saw a video that your group had made. Maybe you want to tell us a little bit about how that came to be.
Okay, so Representative Huizenga is my district's legislator.
So he's a U.S. congressman?
Yes, he's a U.S. congressman. And he had some not so nice things to say, in my opinion. I asked him if he wanted to turn our schools into fortresses for guns to be held everywhere. And I asked him if he's for certain legislation. And his response was nothing. There was no substance to it. It was, thank you for reaching out to me.
So you wrote him a letter.
I wrote him a letter.
Asking some of these specific questions.
And I released the letter at a press briefing, and I sent it to both of his emails, which he'll deny to this day that they never got them. But I got a response. And in that response, there was no answer to my questions. There was no answer to anything I had stated. There was no answer to, there was nothing.
And I think that's the video I saw where you and fellow students are reading that letter. It's a very polite letter, but yeah, it's very nonspecific. It certainly doesn't address questions about gun safety or legislation. So I think you kind of called him out and said, hey, if this is the kind of letter you're going to send us back, it's clear that you're not taking us seriously.
And when we did that, we sent it to news stations, and it sort of made him take us seriously. And I think that was our point. It really was our point to make him take the young people seriously and to let other young people know that we're out here and we care just as much about this issue as any other student does. We care about our safety. We care about the community that we live in.
Anything else that you want to say about work that you've been doing recently? I think you may have also visited a congressional office over the summer. Is that right?
So right after the video was released, we had a meeting with Huizenga.
And that was in the spring?
That was in the spring. We went to his office. Everything was paid for because community members donated, which we were so grateful for. I can't explain how wonderful of an experience that was.
When you say they paid for, what did they pay for?
They donated for plane tickets. They donated for
so you went out
hotel
to his
accommodations.
Washington, D.C. office.
We went to his Washington, D.C. office and had a conversation with him.
Yeah.
And he was still very rude, didn't like what we have to say. He was very offended, and he proceeded to tell me at the very, very end, as I was walking out, that he didn't receive the letter. And it struck me because this was about the issues, not about the letter anymore, because we were there to talk about the issues.
And he didn't, did he engage with you on any of the issues in a way that you felt was kind of getting at what you're trying to accomplish?
More attacking us, I'd have to say. We were trying to be as respectful as possible, but he was very hostile because we'd ask him a question, and then he just tried to make us contradict ourselves. And then he said, oh, in 3 days, we're going to be at your high school having a town hall meeting we set up with your principal. My principal didn't know about that. The students didn't know about it. So obviously not about the students, and it's not about our school. Because where was the students involved? Where was the school involved?
Yeah.
And Representative Huizenga has been everything except kind to my group and to myself. And to an extent, I get it. We've called him out, and people are intimidated by that. People don't like that, but it's about our lives. It's about my community's lives.
Well, I think what you're saying is what we've seen around the country, especially in the last year and a half, more and more people are realizing that they have a stake in this and that they want to have a voice in government. They want to talk to their legislators. And we know many legislators have been resistant to or hesitant to have town hall meetings. So it sounds like what you've experienced as a group of high school students is what we see in a lot of parts of the country.
Yeah, Representative Huizenga, with this private town hall that was not open to the public or media, it very just put us at awe because in our letter, in our second letter that we sent to him, we asked for him to have a public advertised town hall. That's not what happened. It's been almost a year now since he's had his last town hall.
Mm-hmm.
That was in August of last year.
So 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Great. So I wanted to also ask you about what do you see as kind of biggest barriers for other people getting involved? You've said some students have seen that they have a stake in this, that they want to be part of this. But what do you think are the biggest barriers for people who have actively resisted or who just seem, whether it's apathetic or uninterested?
I think it's our education system, I know it's a weird thing to point out, but in our social studies and our civics classes, we don't talk about activism. We don't talk about the labor movement, really. We don't talk about the civil rights movement, barely. Like, we learned about it a lot as an elementary student, but we didn't talk about how much work activism is and how much a person's life is at stake. But then also, I just have to look at society as a whole, and adults like to suppress young people since the beginning of time. Like, we're not allowed to vote at the age of 17 in the primaries if we're going to be 18 by the general election, but we're also allowed to take out hundreds of thousands of dollars of student loans. So they only allow us to have a voice in a certain way, and it seems as if that's only monetary.
Yeah. Well, did you have much civics education in high school? I know I hear generally that that has declined quite a bit across the country. What about at your particular high school?
I'm so grateful for my government teacher, because if it wasn't for Mr. Vincent and the course that he taught and the work as the president of the union at my school, I wouldn't be who I was today. I wouldn't be so deeply involved in activism. I wouldn't have gotten so involved in the 2016 election, now the 2018 election, because he inspired me. He helped me to realize that I have so much potential. So I'm grateful for the work he's put in to make his class good and to have conversation, to be unbiased.
That sounds like the teacher at your school, Mr. Vincent, found a way to really make this class real for you and to show you your personal sort of stake in what these issues are. So that's wonderful to hear that that's going on in your high school. Anything you want to add?
One of my favorite moments from that classroom, actually, we were talking about how Trump just won. It was the day after the election. And then it's not my favorite moment. I disregard that. It's one of the most awestruck moments in my whole entire life. My teacher pinpointed the fact that Donald Trump won, and he was very unbiased with it. He made the statement. He wasn't like sad or angry about it. And he went to go back to his desk, and a student with a MAGA hat turned to MAGA. So Make America Great Again hat.
Okay.
Turned to one of the immigrant students in her class, just got her legal immigration status, probably a month before Trump got elected. And he said, "Go back to your country." Everyone in the room was silent. My teacher didn't notice. And I just remember before I could do anything, before anyone else could do anything, it's as almost if my body was moving before I could even think about it. And I went over to him and I was like, "Don't ever effing say that." And my teacher smiled, people around me smiled. That may seem aggressive, but the fact that the Trump election, that he got elected, could do something, just change society as a whole, and see how people are so open to being rude now, that's one of the most distinct moments where I realize that I'm going to be an activist. It's happening now. I can't be subtle. I have to be bold, you know.
Well, thank you for sharing that story. I want to ask you a little bit about your childhood or your upbringing and any sense of like personal values, guiding principles. This show is very much about that topic. And I'm always curious kind of what you would consider to be those principles in your life and how you identified them.
And I think what sort of helped me to realize that empathy and compassion is one of my moral pillars is because of the personal struggles I've had to go through, figuring out my identity as a gay person or figuring out what my gender is. Because for a long while, I didn't understand that a person could be just gay. Mm-hmm. I was trying to convince myself that, I'm not gay, I'm just pan. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of had a crisis with my gender identity too. And I think as I gained more of an empathetic eye and a compassionate heart, and I spoke to more LGBT people, I realized that the world is so diverse and so ever-changing that, one, I don't have to create a label just yet, and then, two, it's okay to have a certain label. It's your choice for a label.
Yeah, and I think I'm always curious, too, if there's any sort of stories that illustrate these things, if you had an experience as a younger person that really helped you think, like, yeah, this is what I believe in, and this is why I believe in it. Anything else about your moral pillars?
So I will read you my moral pillars.
Okay.
So I have four.
Yeah.
The first one is empathy and compassion. The second is inclusivity. And then the third is data. And then the fourth is willfulness.
Okay, so empathy and inclusivity. And data. Well, tell me, data, that's an interesting one. How do you mean data?
So data is one of my four moral pillars because I strongly believe if you don't have the facts and the science behind something, then why should you believe that? Okay. Why should you get to go out and say, oh, this is the best solution, this is how we cure cancer, or this is how we end world hunger? My moral pillar is to have empathy and compassion and to feed the hungry. And those are my actions, yet I don't have the science to back it up how we're going to do that. I don't have the data to enact those policies.
Yeah, so the evidence for why we do the things we do. Yeah, not just based on whim or on somebody's suggestion, but really looking at what the needs are, what the research shows is the best solution.
Yeah, because if we're going to create a solution, it has to be the solution, in my opinion.
The right solution.
The right,
based on
not my solution, but the right solution. It has to be a solution rooted in data and compassion, empathy. And
okay. And then you mentioned, I think, a fourth one. What was your last one?
My fourth one.
Yeah, your fourth pillar.
To be exact, was willfulness.
Willfulness. Okay. Now, that's probably a word that I would think has a little bit of a negative connotation. So how do you understand willfulness?
Growing up, not understanding what my identity was until later on in my young years, I realized that I have to be open and I have to be willing to change and to hear others' stories with empathy and compassion and sort of to take them on to myself and to reflect onto who I am as a person.
So with willfulness, is it a sense of just being really convicted in things and acting on what it is that you believe?
So having the will to have an open heart, having the will to act with what your beliefs are.
Okay.
I think you can take willfulness both ways, but that's sort of how I believe it to be. Being willing to open to other people's conversation and their critiques, but also having the will to put yourself on the front lines.
Yeah. Well, and you're saying that, and it's sparking a thought. I think you were recently involved in a die-in Congressman Huizinga's office. You mentioned him earlier in the interview, but you went with a number of other students, and I think it was coordinated in other parts of the country. Maybe you want to say a little bit about that, because talk about really putting your principles into action and going and doing something.
So we went, it was a few students. It was students from Youth Activism Coalition, and then it was students with the March for Our Lives Grand Rapids. And we got about 19 students, I believe, to hold signs that says, if I die in a school shooting, blah, 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 blah. Mine said, if I die in a school shooting, make my funeral protest. Mm. And then people had orange tape over their mouths. We all walked in one by one, like we were in a line going into...
And you walked into his office?
We walked into his office.
Here in West Michigan?
In West Michigan. Okay. And we stood there, looked at everyone in the eyes, and then I read every single name that's... every single person that's died in a school shooting. I read their names since Columbine.
And you use an event like that to, I guess, raise awareness of violence within schools. Do you also see that as being part of moving things forward in terms of making some change in our country?
Every social movement has to have its tipping point. And every time there's a school shooting, every time there's a shooting that's big and makes national television, or if it doesn't make national television, it's just local news, you have to take your actions bigger and bigger, because that's how social movements they get what they need. They get what they want. They get what is right for society. You have to be able to put your safety on the line. You have to be able to put your image on the line.
Yeah, and I know there have been many attempts to change legislation and to put new laws in place to limit the use of guns, to change the rules on background checks. A lot of those things have been stalled for such a long time, which is obviously why the Parkland students and many other students, including your group here in West Michigan, has said, what else can we be doing? How else do we get things to change? Because some of these more conventional routes don't seem to be working. I mean, you're a young person who has such a commitment to changing things and to making the world better. And you care about the environment. You care about LGBT issues. You care about gun violence. So, you know, you're quite unusual, I think, in the level of awareness and also willingness to take action. So I'm just curious if, you know, in your own mind, it's clear to you why you're this way.
It is because of my background with Christianity, I do believe, because from my perspective and what I grew up knowing is that Jesus and God, they are love, they are the light of the world, which I only say that because I was in Godspell, a musical. Light of the World was one of the songs.
Okay.
And so I did learn compassion, empathy through religion. But I think more of it came from my worldly experiences and hearing how my stepmother, who is African American, she's very religious. Her name is LaRonda. She's not my stepmom, but I still consider her my stepmom still. She has taught me so much about empathy and compassion from her perspective as a Black woman than I could have ever learned for my first 8 years of my life before I knew her. But it's worldly experiences that make us who we are.
Anything in particular stand out in those worldly experiences?
Yeah. Why I have so much empathy with the LGBT community and why it's not only because I am gay, but because when I was younger, after getting out of the pool, we all went back into the locker room and the students forced me to strip. Mm-hmm. And I did not want to whatsoever. I was very uncomfortable. And I didn't, so they threw me to the ground and they all stripped and they all like beat me with their towels. And I think that's one of the, it's one of the things that I never talk about.
What a terrible experience.
Yeah. But it's directly affected how I view things today and how I don't believe in violence, how I believe that we need to talk and about, whether it be about sexual assault or whether it be about racial issues or whether it's about the gun violence situation and how it affects our communities. We just need to talk about it. Whether it be with direct action, bold movements to get people to have conversation, or whether it's just having conversation with someone like you and the listeners.
Well, thank you for sharing something that I'm sure is hard to think about and a painful memory, but clearly has helped shape who you are.
I know that there are other students out there who think exactly like me, how they didn't really have someone to talk to growing up.
Mm-hmm. And you think that's because you're gay or just
partially
family dynamics?
Family dynamics for sure. My dad is a very conservative man. He voted for Donald Trump. He has the blue stripe American flag in his front yard. He has the
And that represents the blue stripe yeah. represents
police.
This.
And so, he's a correctional officer, so I understand why.
But interesting that your father comes from a really different point
does.
Of view, I think, from probably many of your positions on things. So it's gotta make for interesting family conversations.
Yeah, it does for sure.
Yeah. So is there any specific action you've taken where you think, yeah, I mean, this really was a way that I could put what I believe into practice or put myself on the line for something I really care about?
With the Student Power Network, I got to learn about so much and I got to see how systemic issues that we face are both systemic issues are societal issues. Everything is a social issue, whether it be economic concerns with our government overspending, or whether it be about redlining, or whether it be about gun violence prevention. I realize that we have a system, and why I'm so drawn to gun violence is because it disproportionately affects African-American communities compared to to white communities in affluent areas.
And that swims against the current of the idea in America that so much of life is determined by the individual, that we can all pull ourselves up sort of, you know, by the proverbial bootstraps,
yes.
that we can all really. But as you're pointing out, there are some really big systemic issues that have to be considered. And we don't all start on third base.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people start in the batter's circle and have to go around all the bases. Other people get a huge head start in life. And I think a lot of times we don't acknowledge that. So as you're saying, with an issue like racism, if a child is born into a neighborhood that has poor schools and lots of crime and drug trafficking, they don't really have the same start as someone who grows up in a home with a lot of safety and a great
money.
School down the road. Yeah. I know that you were out marching at a peace rally in Chicago recently, and there were students there from the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas School, the Parkland students, some students from West Michigan, from other parts of the country. Anything about that experience that you want to say yet before we close?
I think the Chicago students are amazing. They've been doing the work that the Parkland students have been doing for years now, and I'm grateful to have met some of those students in Chicago and to see how they're not getting the media attention that they so rightfully deserve, and then to understand how the Parkland students realize that too. and that they're using their privileges that they have to uplift those students, and how they always shout them out, and they share their events, and they share the videos, and they talk about, oh, go to this, because these Chicago students have been doing it way longer than us, and they deserve just as much attention.
Well, thank you very much for sharing all those thoughts with me and with our listeners. Eli Nichols, president of the Reese Puffer Gay Straight Alliance, co-founder of the Youth Activism Coalition. It's been a joy to talk with you today. I also want to thank you for listening to Your True North. I'm your host, Cindy Camp. Follow us on Facebook at Your True North Podcasts, and Twitter is at YTN Podcasts. Please join us again for another conversation about values as a compass for life's journey.
You've been listening to Your True North with Cindy Camp. The opinions expressed on today's episode are not necessarily those of WXAV 88.3 FM, St. Xavier University, or the producers of Your True North. For a copy of today's program, you can download it as a podcast by visiting yourtruenorthpodcasts.com. Thank you very much for listening to Your True North.